Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Is the health of the Black Hills National Forest at a crossroads? Is the amount of timber being forested today sustainable in the wake of forest fires and the pine beetle epidemic? What data do we have that helps us predict the future of the forest? Tomorrow, the Forest Service Rocky Mountain region hosts a formal stakeholder meeting and discussion to review data projections. STPB's Seth Tupper will cover that meeting. Today, we give you a preview of what's at stake. Journalist Larry Parnas has been studying our national forests through the O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service Journalism at Marquette University in Milwaukee, and he joins us now on the phone. Larry, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's great to be on with you.
Tell us a little bit about your ongoing interest in forestry, in particular the Black Hills National Forest. How did this come to be part of the work that you do?
Well, when I began the fellowship at Marquette, I did a national look at U.S. Forest Service locations and what kinds of issues were bubbling along in places that, because of eclipses in journalism's muscle, just might not be getting the attention they need. And soon into the effort, I connected with some people who had been watching the Black Hills issue, and it just emerged as one of the places in the project I'm doing that really warranted some time. So dug into it, and it ends up being very timely. As you mentioned, there's a big meeting tomorrow to try to look into the crystal ball about what kind of timber cuts can be sustained in the forest going forward.
And you can read Larry Parnas's report in the Berkshire Eagle. We'll put a link up to that website after our program so you can hear his whole story. We're going to hear in a few minutes from some of the people that he talked to. Some of these names are going to be familiar to South Dakotans, of course. But let's go back a little bit, Larry, and explain to people, because South Dakota is a big state and we have a statewide audience. Not everybody understands the multi-use and the purpose of and the intersection between the timber industry and what many people see as recreation. So give us a little of the history of the forest, first of all.
Sure. All across the country, the Forest Service manages nearly 200 million acres of forest land. And in the Black Hills, some intrepid Forest Service employees have been stewards of roughly 1.2 million acres of land in the Black Hills. For a century plus, the Forest Service has been making wood available, saw timber available from all the national forests to the commercial markets. It's part of what purpose national forests serve. But for 60 years now, there's been a national law saying that in the course of doing that, Forest Service must serve multiple interests on this. And that means that in addition to just being a supplier of timber and wood to commerce, it has to address habitat issues and recreational use and all other kinds of features that they fall under this multiple use notion, Lori. And I think where we are now in the Black Hills, this very beautiful place, I had such a fascinating visit there in January. It's truly a unique place in that it rises out of the plains. It's dubbed the Island in the Plains by the Forest Service. Over the course of the last, say, 15 years, the mountain pine beetle blight and wildfire, particularly the Jasper Fire of 2000, have really beat up on considerable acreage within the national forest. The beetles affected nearly 500,000 acres, and the fire itself took 80,000 acres. So all of that severely reduced the inventory of timber and trees of all kinds, primarily ponderosa pine. And so the very difficult question arose slowly before the Forest Service and the timber interests that it tries to work collaboratively with. The question comes up, to what degree can the kind of cutting that has been historic be sustained? And for many years, there's not been enough data, in part because the Forest Service hasn't had enough funding to do a really fuller picture, provide a fuller picture of the inventory. kind of an impasse and wrestling over getting a sense of what the forest's condition is, mm-hmm. finally led to an effort to get a lot more data in terms of actual surveys, not aerial surveying. And that data is in hand now, and that's framing an entirely new kind of discussion that is going to be presented tomorrow to some people who have really a hard decision to make.
Let's hear from some of the people that you spoke to for your reporting, and start with Blaine Cook, because he's going to address this idea of data. Before we play that clip, tell us who he is.
Blaine is a longtime silviculturist. He's the forest health expert, was the top person doing that for the Black Hills. And we, in the course of our project, read through hundreds of documents obtained through public records requests. And Blaine is the insistent voice saying, okay, people, things are changing here. How are we going to get a handle on that? And what will we do when we know what the real conditions are?
Everybody at the table agreed to go. Let's go get some data. Let's get some reports. In the meantime, the Forest Service produces what they said they're going to do. Everybody agreed to that. Okay, here's the numbers. Do the math. Mm-hmm. Here's your choices. What choice would you like to follow?
And Larry, some people are who live in this place and have spent years working there are interested in the data, but they also are looking and seeing what's right in front of them. Tell us about John Johnson of Deadwood.
I met Mr. Johnson, just walked up his driveway, which I know is always kind of risky, but he was a genial fellow in his 80s who was a civil engineer, long time, helped build the interstate through South Dakota, and he's lived on this small ranch that his father got around the time General Custer came through. He's been there, his family's been there that long. He once was a logger. He just came to feel and expressed in a letter to the Rapid City Journal that the Forest Service was overcutting.
It just appears to me like they're trying to, like I said in my letter, over there, they're just trying to meet a quota, and they don't give a damn. That is not going to grow back for 50 years.
So, Larry, I'm sure that you noticed that people around here are not afraid to tell you what they think. Some of these people, though, were not able to before because of the jobs that they held. And you're finding mm-hmm. people who are retired and able to speak out a little bit more. Tell us about Dave Mertz, please.
Dave was the Natural Resources Staff Officer, and he's going to speak on behalf of retirees tomorrow. The retiree community is quite outspoken. I found that across the country. Some of the people who really want to explain what's happening, what environmental challenges they're facing, or what their agencies are facing, are people who used to work for the service, and Dave is one of those.
I think you could easily say that there is no other national forest in the country that have this good of data on their forest right now. Maybe ever was. Most of us knew there was a big problem already anyway.
So, Larry, people knew there was a problem, and now they feel supported by that data. Have you been able to look through the report?
Oh, absolutely. It's careful. It's written by three scientists who work for the Forest Service. It's undergoing a peer review, and actually at the time of its release early this month, that peer review process is underway. I think that as this breaks out into a discussion on Friday, some of that peer review and outside review is going to be heard as people question some of the assumptions or methods of the study. But the report says that if there isn't a change in the historic levels of timber harvest, then within 30 years, a little longer than 30 years, the line on available standing saw timber goes all the way to zero. So there would be nothing to cut. And that, of course, raises the question that Dave Mertz and Blaine Cook talk about of sustainability and being able, as the law requires, to provide a supply of timber to the industry, to local industry, in perpetuity. So the prediction on one of the charts in this report that doing nothing could lead to a total crash in the supply of saw timber is pretty alarming.
And that impacts the forest, and it impacts the jobs. It impacts the supply chain in a lot of different ways. Tell us a little bit about, it seems there's another side to this here as well. So the Black Hills Forest Resource Association introduced this guest, and we're going to have two clips from him. Really, we'll just play them back to back once you set it up and tell us.
Okay, good. Yes, the person who is, I think, most knowledgeable of about the industry's interests in the relationship with the National Forest there is a fellow by the name of Ben Woodkey, with that association you just mentioned, Laurie. Mm-hmm. He did some graduate work in the Black Hills, studying in Colorado. He lives in the Rapid City area now. And he is a fierce defender of the local timber industry's point of view and stake in the future of how much of that resource can be taken out of the forest.
It's nowhere near resolution as far as even really figuring out what the impacts on timber inventory have been here, or what those impacts might mean to the future of a forest management program here in the Black Hills. I think we all recognize that there's been some activity, mainly from mountain pine beetles and fires here. It'd be tough to make a case for continuing to increase harvest right now, but I think it's equally, if not more, difficult to make the case for reducing the harvest right now. And
Larry, do you think someone's going to make the case at this meeting tomorrow for increasing the harvest? Is that actually on the table for somebody?
No.
Okay.
In a word, the actual annual cut from the forest, and I'm resisting throwing a lot of numbers at your listeners because they, a couple of numbers in and they all start to swim around. But just in terms of volume, the report finds, based on this intensive new data gathering, that there's 12 million 100 cubic feet of standing life timber. So just think of that number, 12 million. That's the number that the report says would be needed to sustain the kind of cutting that the forest plan accepts. And the data found that there's a little less than half of that. Mm. And that even if some of the measures to reduce the harvest are put in place, it would take a century to return to the level that would be enough to do that. And that number of about 6 million standing live sawtimber now, that's way down. It was in 1999, it was 15 million. So it's 6 now, it was above 15. And that in there in that time is terrible fire consequences and the depredation of the beetle and a pretty high timber harvest. So the hardship for the industry now is that the forest is in a position, or the Forest Service is in a position to view a reduction in the allowable harvest as a way to restock the forest to make it sustainable so that it could serve in perpetuity. For the industry, it means hardship now, and the Forest Service and some of the advocates of reducing the timber harvest say, look, you're gonna crash and have no timber at some point. Do you want to face that challenge now, or do you want to wait for it later? And for the industry, it has real consequences. The timber interest people that we spoke to, or that we research through the documents, speak quite candidly about the likelihood that there'd be mill closings in communities where there aren't a lot of jobs. Some of these mills are the major employers in rural South Dakota and Wyoming. So there's immediate pain there.
Right. Larry Parnas, we're going to put a link up to the Berkshire Eagle investigation that you did on our website at listen.sdpb.org. That meeting tomorrow is, of course, altered because of coronavirus. There are call-in numbers and such, and SDPB's Seth Tupper is going to cover that for South Dakota listeners here, and he'll bring us news from that presentation, which is tomorrow from 1 to 4 Mountain
Time. He's someone who knows this issue well, and I'm sure that he'll be a very valuable report from Seth.
Thank you so much. Larry Parnas, we appreciate your time.
You're welcome. This is a really good time to go to the woods.